Howdy, folks, and welcome to another dose of childhood humor, or sometimes childish humor, here on Not Your Mother's Goose. I'm Topher Goggin, and we have now reached one episode for every year I am old, so therefore welcome to episode 28, as far as you know. Coming up today, it's actually a very special show, as we're taking a different kind of trip to Sesame Street. I'm going to turn on an episode and basically live tweet the whole thing, and we will see how much I remember from back in the day. Spoiler alert, it's going to be a lot. Just when I outgrew the show as a child, that's when my little sister rolled in and started watching, and I ended up watching the whole thing over again, and that means I remember a frightening amount, as you're about to see. Now, we're also going to get ready for a before and after Thanksgiving as we check out Alice's Restaurant in Wonderland. We'll make a check of the news, and we'll have sponsorship from a brand new tech product brought to you courtesy of Hansel and Gretel. Before that, though, two things. First, the obligatory reminder to go visit notyourmothersgoose.com/store, where you can look at the cards and the brand new 2023 wall calendars. But beyond that, I have some very exciting news. We've had a lot of fun on the show with our tournaments of Disney villains, Disney rides, Disney sidekicks, and it won't be long before it'll be time for another one, I think. I actually had an idea in mind for what we might do, but then our friend Adam Vibber had a better one. A tournament of Disney dining. Because if there is one thing that Disney fans have opinions about, it's Disney restaurants. Boardwalk Pizza Window. In the past, when we've done these tournaments, we've used our seating committee to set the field, leading, of course, to plenty of grumbling. And we will still do that partially this time. But now you're going to get a say-so, too. 50% of the seating formula will be listener votes. So if you've got a favorite Disney dining destination, roll on over to notyourmothersgoose.com right now. You can fill out a ballot. You've got a chance to nominate choices in up to 4 different categories, so get those votes in. Okay, that wraps up the housekeeping. So now, for the second show in a row, let's settle in for an hour with Super Grover and head to Sesame Street. Last time we got started with Sesame Street, which included the acknowledgement that you just couldn't begin to touch it all. What do you talk about? The guy with the blue head who always gets Grover as a waiter? Those aliens that go yip yip yip? They could have written a 17-hour show. So here is plan B. I have found on YouTube an episode from the 1985-86 season right in my childhood wheelhouse. I'm just going to flip it on and we'll see what we get. So here we go. After the initial sunny days, we have opened with Big Bird and Snuffy. I wonder if they've figured out that Snuffy is real. Ah, no. That is actually the subject of the first segment. Big Bird claims the grown-ups are meeting Snuffy today. That claim went on for a long time, from what I remember. If folks are not familiar, Mr. Snuffleupagus is Big Bird's giant friend who looks like what you'd get if an elephant mated with a piece of shag carpet right out of 1975. The problem was that any time someone over the age of 12 showed up, Snuffy would then run off to get his oil changed or something, so the grown-ups were certain that Snuffy was imaginary. This was quite an ordeal, but apparently Big Bird today has a plan to deal with that that involves a secret word and everything, so let's stay tuned. Also, the secret word is food, so let's not hire Big Bird to manage our passwords. We take a break for some interludes. That includes a kid impersonating animals, followed by Cookie Monster emerging for a segment where he encounters an F, and the other letters OOD, combines them to read food, then literally adds some salt and pepper, dons a bib, and wolfs the letters down, and then eats the bib. Wow, we're less than 8 minutes into this show, and I already am starting to skip over stuff because it's coming so fast. They're now on to Name That Food, a game show hosted by someone named Don Carrot. On this show, contestants must identify a food on a screen, but then it magically appears inside their podium, and they have to eat it to get the points. Oh boy, player two just got liver. I am not liking his chances here. No, he is not interested. Wow, but player one, that's Debbie. She rolls in for the Family Feud-style steal and wolfs down the liver like it's a chocolate shake. She also eats the celery, the squash, the spaghetti and meatballs, and wins in a rout. Go, Debbie. We're back now to Snuffy and Big Bird, who are still discussing their plan. Snuffy is so excited about food being the word that he decides to go home to tell his mom all about it. Ah, of course, that's what's going to happen. So much for hanging around to meet the grown-ups. Big Bird nonetheless tries to execute the plan and starts screaming food. The adults come running over like the taco truck just drove up. And of course, Snuffy is long gone. They're off to a rough start. Gordon now suggests that Big Bird should get someone to babysit Snuffy so he can't run away next time. Unfortunately, we have a very short list of volunteers consisting only of Elmo. Certainly, he is well-suited for lassoing a Snuffleupagus. Okay, wait. Phil Donahue has just showed up. Seriously, the talk show host. And he is here to lead a debate between Maria and Luis about whether or not food is a silly secret word, complete with Oscar, Gordon, Susan, Bob, and David weighing in from the audience. This is hilarious. Donahue is now trying to keep the conversation moving like he's going to run out of time. Thank goodness Jerry Springer wasn't big in 1985. Also, Phil apparently came to visit Sesame Street because he was getting his toaster repaired. Didn't know that was a feature offered on Sesame Street, but okay. All right, we're on to another break. After a quick segment with some blocks, Grover comes to get a lesson from a girl who's about 4 years old about how to follow an arrow. However, the arrow keeps changing where it's pointing. That allows the girl to run Grover ragged with directions to her great delight. Then we're on from that to a song that starts, "It takes a lot of little nuts." But don't worry, the next line is, "To make a jar of peanut butter." I had totally forgotten about this segment, but it's actually right up there with the "How Crayons Are Made" bit. Though honestly, a lot of the footage of the globs of peanut butter that I'm watching here look just like the footage of the globs of crayon wax. Watching this, I think I know why I became suspicious of peanut butter as a kid and still don't eat it now. It's just a brown crayon in a jar if you've watched too much Sesame Street. Now, here's an interesting point. We are actually 22 minutes into the show, and I have no idea what the letters or number are that are sponsoring this episode. Let's see when that comes. But oh, first, yes, excellent. Here's some good news. Hi-ho, Kermit the Frog from Sesame Street News is here. I was totally hoping I was going to get this on this show because Sesame Street News basically is Not Your Mother's Goose News. Let's see what we're reporting on. Kermit is reporting on homeless pigs. We're outside the straw house. Kermit asks the pig how he feels. This is great. The pig goes off on him, just like every single coach wants to do when he's asked how he feels after winning the Super Bowl. The pig literally says it is a dumb question, says he's angry, and storms off saying, "Newscasters." Of course, Kermit now has gone on and repeated the same question for the stickhouse pig, who also complains but indicates that he's sad. Now we're off to the brick house, which not also is fine, but the pig is having a crew install a satellite dish. He's proud, of course. He invites the other pigs for drinks around the pool, and as Kermit attempts to sign off, references an alleged wolf, leading to the wolf to come out and literally blow Kermit off the screen. Ah, here's our answer about the number. It's going to be 6. I know this because we just got the 6 version of that famous jazz-playing pinball machine that counts 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. Still cool. That has the obvious follow-up to it, of course. That's Harry Monster and Lily Tomlin side by side in a giant rocking chair discussing what makes Lily proud. She goes with roller skating. I think I would go with getting into this enormous rocking chair because that's a pretty strong accomplishment itself. Then we go to a cool song about a boy's wheelchair and everything he can do with it, which includes basketball, flying a kite, and some pretty awesome wheelies. Wow, okay, I'm almost 2 pages in here and we have only reached the 31-minute mark of an hour-long episode. What a reminder of how much content this show could cram into a small amount of time. I think it's time for us to take a break. We'll come back later, see if I've actually found the magic episode where Snuffy is revealed. May very well be the one. More on this to come later in the show. If you only check the news every 3 weeks, you'll be woefully uninformed. A lot happier, but still uninformed. If you check our news every 3 weeks, it may be even worse. But that's never stopped you before. Second little pig distressed as Lassie keeps stealing his building materials. Oregon Trail Highway Patrol tickets wagon clocked at grueling pace. And in another traffic-related story, we have the following. Construction slows yellow brick road to one lane. Munchkin Country motorists are advised to leave a little early this morning as construction closures continue to narrow a four-mile stretch of the yellow brick road to one-lane traffic. The surface has fallen into disrepair in recent years and created a rough commute for drivers to the Emerald City. But rather than just renting a bulldozer and starting over, the Wizard of Oz added a kiln and 8,200 gallons of reflective yellow paint to the budget for brick replacement and refreshing. Work began last Tuesday and was expected to take 3 to 4 weeks, but already has suffered delays when multiple staffers melted away during rainy workdays. The project also has met a surprising degree of celebrity opposition, with Elton John leading a vociferous group advocating to say goodbye to the road altogether. Fashion expert Carson Kressley also expressed his personal disgust for the project, noting that using orange barrels to accent a yellow road constituted, quote, a crime against the color wheel not seen since Big Bird arrived at the Emmys in a chartreuse tuxedo. You never know when your stepmother is going to take you for a hike, and you can't be too prepared. Here's someone who learned that firsthand and survived, here to make it easier for you to protect yourself.
Hello everyone, it's your friend Hansel here. If you keep getting dragged out and ditched in the woods, it can be hard to carry rocks in your pocket to find your way home. It's 2022. There has to be a better way. That's why I've partnered with Apple to create the iStone mobile navigational system. With the all-new iStone handset, just tap the screen every 30 paces or so to mark out a cloud-based pebble path right back to your house. There's no risk of birds eating your iStone navigational points, and the iStone interface will automatically switch to display today's Wordle if your stepmother gets suspicious about what you're doing. P.S. Try guessing paste. With primitive rotary stones, your safe hiking radius was limited to the length of the cord. Touchstones weren't much better. But all that changes with iStone. With yearly upgrades, you'll be on the cutting edge of anti-parental navigational technology, at least until the iStone 15 Pro gets so big that it won't fit in your overalls and requires a wheelbarrow anyway. Until then, leave the bread in the drawer and the rocks in the garden and head to the forest with confidence with iStone.
Our friend John Johnson, who can now add playing Hansel to playing Humpty Dumpty on his resume, I'm sure that will take him far in the world, here to hawk the iStone. Thank you, JJ, great as always. And now that we're safely out of the woods, we can get back to the headlines. Queen of Hearts debuts new multi-purpose croquet mallet and battle axe called the Guillotine. Captain Hook contacts Bindi Irwin to inquire about accommodations for Crocodile. And ripped from the real headlines, we go to the realm of real-world fake magic. Rumpelstiltskin to fill in for Teller. Famed magical duo Penn and Teller got a temporary name change Monday following the announcement that Rumpelstiltskin will fill in while Teller recovers from a recent quadruple bypass. This guy's magic is amazing, Penn Jillette told a group of Las Vegas reporters while announcing the short-term Penn and Rump residency that will run through Christmas. I mean, sure, Teller could make a quarter appear behind your ear, but in our first rehearsal, Rumpelstiltskin rolled in with a wheelbarrow full of straw, and we walked out with 1.6 mil. If we hadn't stopped at the craps table on the way out, we wouldn't even have to do these shows. Jillette said he contacted Mr. Stiltskin after a chance elevator meeting with a miller's daughter from Henderson, who said she, quote, knew a guy who could help out while Teller is on the mend. Apparently, she thought about claiming she could do the whole straw into gold trick herself, but decided against that due to fears she might get locked in a room at the Masquerade Tower at the Rio, which just wasn't worth it. Rumpelstiltskin is expected to begin performing next weekend, as soon as he gets the hang of shutting up and not chanting his name through the entire show. Production staff did echo that he's the perfect choice for the role, mainly because he's the right size to fit into all of Teller's suits. Alice's Restaurant in Wonderland. With Thanksgiving a couple of weeks away, it's time for a merger of classics on today's movie-slash-song before and after, and that's because Arlo Guthrie is headed through the looking glass to check out Alice's Restaurant in Wonderland. Fortunately, this is not 17 minutes long. Now, we need to begin by remembering that, just like the song, Alice's Restaurant in Wonderland is not the name of the restaurant, but we can be pretty sure that you ought to think twice about ordering any cookies there, lest you immediately inflate to 10 times your normal size. If nothing else, order off the kids' menu, because it'll be plenty. The story begins with Arlo visiting Alice and volunteering to take her garbage to the dump. He joins up with his friend the Caterpillar. We can have a separate debate over which of those two smokes more weird stuff. And they head off, only to find that this dump is closed because it's the Mad Hatter's unbirthday. They've never heard of a dump closed on an unbirthday, but they find some other garbage left by the Dodo and drop theirs off. They go back to Alice's, have another tea party that couldn't be beat, and don't have any problems until the next morning when they get a call from officers Tweedledee and Tweedledum, who definitely seem like they would have the ace investigating skill of Officer Obi from the original. Anyway, blah blah blah, Arlo gets convicted of littering, despite the fact that the judge slash King of Hearts never could quite see the Cheshire Cat during the trial, possibly because he can't see over the top of his own desk. Arlo then has to pay $50 and clean up the garbage, though he just does that by enlisting the dog creature that has a broom for a face to sweep up the path. All is well for a while, until years later Arlo gets notice that he's been drafted by the Queen of Hearts to join the deck of cards painting her roses. He heads over to the White Rabbit's house for his final inspection, where instead of seeing a shrink, he ends up shrinking himself with a magic potion that should probably be on Alice's menu with the cookies back at the restaurant. He sits around with the rest of the criminal element on the Group W bench, namely a walrus and a carpenter convicted of some oysters rights violations, and eventually gets denied for the Queen's service when they find out he was a 3-time New York City croquet champion. Arlo then wakes up, discovering it all to be a dream, but writes a hit song to protest croquet cheaters around the world, and also the whole off with their heads thing. He probably wouldn't have been big on that either. All right, we are back to finish out this live narration of a full Sesame Street episode. Previously on Sesame Street, Big Bird is trying to use the secret word food to summon the Sesame folks to his nest to meet Snuffy. So far, he has not had any success. We, however, are still on the Sesame Street's version of a commercial, which presently is an instrumental number of activities in a random neighborhood, including everything from hopscotch to snow cones. That gives way to the Count playing the organ and singing a classic song called The Batty Bat as he both waltzes and counts the bats in his castle. You know, I was always a little freaked out by the Count as a kid, but I have to report that I did just sing along pretty much word for word to The Batty Bat 36 years later. Not sure whether that's actually good news. Next up is an alternating English and Spanish segment about kittens. I will tell you that Sesame Street succeeded in a lot of things, but not in making me into a cat person. However, as I'm typing this, I can hear the audio of what comes next, and it's the song Splish Splash. I know even before I click back over into the other window that this is going to be a bunch of people at a zoo scrubbing down an elephant like they're running a car wash. Okay, actually, a lady holding a giant scrub brush just declared it's not like washing a car, so what do I know? And let's see, once bath time is over, what's next? We're going to do some more animal counting, going from one horse up through 6 chicks. Now, what do we have here? Some sort of blue Muppet that I don't know who is writing a letter with a pencil that is considerably larger than his head. Oh no, the pencil is just broken. He leaves to go get a sharpener, declaring that you can't do anything with a pencil with no point. Why do I suspect he's going to be proven wrong with that assertion? Ah, yes, here we go. A blast from the past. It's the bebopping purple two-headed monster character. I loved these guys, especially when they went shoe shopping and couldn't agree which shoes to buy, so they just settled for wearing the empty shoeboxes on their feet. Of course, looks like they're going to find the pencil, yes, which they start playing like a drumstick. Yep. Then they use it as a magic wand to make a plant appear. Then the plant disappears. That's a trick I can do, making plants disappear or die. And let's see, what else? Now they're using it to conduct an invisible orchestra, and just as the orchestra wraps up, the kid returns to finish up his note, thanking his aunt for a pencil sharpener. Fair enough. We're on from there to the full alphabet, all done in aerial shots of kids spelling out the letters. And just as a point of reference, we're about 20 minutes away from the main story at this point, as they bring on a snake charmer to introduce the letter S to us. Alright, back to the action. Now we've got a strategy session between Big Bird and Elmo, who decide that Elmo will hold Snuffy by the snuffle to keep him from getting away while Big Bird summons the others. Big Bird delivers the word, at which point Snuffy decides he should go home to brush his fur. He should just hire those people who were doing the elephant washing a few minutes ago. It's interesting how much of this is coming back to me, even though I saw it, I think, when I was in kindergarten. I remember watching this at my grandma's house, and I know that Elmo is about to end up hanging on for dear life while Snuffy windmills his snuffle, like he couldn't just walk away. And yep, there it is. In quite the shocker, the grown-ups decide not to come to the secret word this time, a little boy-who-cried-wolf action going on. Though in frustration, they now have decided they're going to make the long walk, about 10 feet. They go in, and now Big Bird is unsure whether he can handle all of this. That allows us to get yet another pump fake on this reveal. We got more of them than Ryan Seacrest revealing American Idol results after the break. But in Big Bird goes, and there are the adults, mouths agape, quite perplexed by the Volkswagen-sized mastodon living on a New York City side street. They all go through the receiving line for a snuffle shake, and just like that, we're back on break. And thank goodness, because we get Bert and Ernie. I thought we were going to miss them for this whole show somehow, but here they are. And in like 2 seconds, I know which one this is. Ernie is having trouble falling asleep, which means he's about to bust out a trumpet and start singing and dancing with some boogie-woogie sheep, to Bert's tremendous annoyance. Oh, wow, and this is a tap dance number. I forgot about that. Of course, Bert didn't know the sheep were coming, and technically it is a bugle that Ernie is playing. By the way, just noting the level of annoyance in Bert to all of this, I am Bert in these situations. And that's before the sheep cart Bert's bed right out the door. Finally, we wrap up with some cooperating circles and the end of the Snuffy introduction, including Phil Donahue, who is somehow still here. And then we've got a voiceover by Oscar the Grouch, who calls the feel-good resolution a, quote, revolting spectacle, and reminds us that today's sponsors were J, S, and the number 6. Well, that was fascinating. I haven't seen that episode since like 85 or 86, and I could quote about half of it. I will declare that it's an incredible show, rather than suggesting that maybe I should have gotten out more as a kid. Onward. With a full episode of The Street in the Books, that brings us to the close of another show. I know that last time I promised you a new Rapunzel's Jukebox song, but you're gonna have to be patient until our next show. Andrew Mitchell is hard at work on a new version of a Garth Brooks tune. I don't want to give it away, but it might rhyme with Bends in Toe Cases. We are trying something particularly adventurous, though, in how we're doing it, and it's proving a little more difficult than expected. If it works, it's going to be totally worth it, so stay tuned. I'm hoping that November 29th will have that for you. And if you want to brainstorm, I will tell you that low places are becoming high places, so inventory your fairy tale knowledge and see if you can figure out where we might be headed with this one, because that will be coming soon. Until then, remember to mosey on over to notyourmothersgoose.com, where you can cast your nominations for who should compete in our upcoming Tournament of Disney Dining. And don't forget while you're there to check out the greeting cards and 2023 calendars. Definitely not too late to get them in plenty of time for Christmas. A big thank you for now to John Johnson for putting together the iStone ad, and to Andrew for the fun brainstorms he is adding to that next jukebox song. I'm Topher Goggin and the Goose is Loose. Have a happy Thanksgiving. I'll be back soon with more for you on Not Your Mother's Goose.